Hello, this is Ray Hearn from Haken, and this is my offbeat interview with Sick Drummer Magazine.
Greetings, everybody. This is Jet of Sick Drummer Magazine, and today we have with us as our guest drummer Ray Hearn of the progressive rock metal band Haken out of the UK. Thank you for joining us today, Ray.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for having me.
So, Ray, tell us, how old were you when this love affair for drumming started to bloom?
Well, I mean, I started when I was about 12, almost kind of by accident, but it kind of bloomed straight away. I was kind of fortunate that I already played a couple of other instruments, so I kind of progressed quite quickly because I was able to read music and I had some kind of sense of rhythm and just general understanding. So, it just kicked off pretty quickly, and It was always one of my big things, I suppose, growing up. I was always playing in bands in school. The drums were always there. They were always present.
So, I mean, you said you were able to, you know, read music and stuff. So did you learn that through school or did you take private lessons? How did that all come about?
Yeah, I started taking piano lessons outside of school when I was about 8, I think. My two older sisters were already taking piano lessons, so I was kind of wondering what the hell they were up to every Saturday. I eventually went and joined them, played for, a few years. And then not long after that as well, I took up the euphonium, which is like a big brass instrument, and was playing in wind bands and things like that. So I kind of already had I was able to read. I was able to kind of play with other people through playing the euphonium, and then later I took up the tuba when I was sort of big enough to actually hold the thing. And it wasn't long after that when the drums then came into the picture.
So when you said that you took piano lessons, did you want to take piano lessons, or did your parents make you take piano lessons?
No, I wanted to take piano lessons, yeah, because as I said, my older sisters were already playing. And I kind of felt a little bit left out. So I wanted to I just wanted to join the club first. But I mean, that said, I never took to the piano like I did with brass instruments or with percussion. I did always find it a lot more difficult. I still play a little bit, but I wouldn't say I'm a pianist anymore. I'm definitely more of a drummer. Yeah.
So when you started playing drums now, what was some of the music that you were playing along to?
I guess I was playing along to like Iron Maiden, System of a Down, Muse, Rammstein, like all of the really big rock and metal bands of my sort of teenage years. Just playing along every night. And then when I was about 15 or so, I think, 15, a friend of mine introduced me to Dream Theater, which was very, very different from what I was used to. And it took me a while to sort of acclimatize myself and get my head around what was going on, because he was raving about how good it was. And initially I was like, I don't know. And then it wasn't long before Scenes from a Memory was like my go-to play-along album. Like after school, when I'd come home from school, I'd just play along and see what happened.
So at what point did you or your family realize that, okay, so you were kind of serious about this and you got your first proper kit? So when did you actually get your first proper kit?
I was actually really lucky. I probably nagged my parents quite a lot, but I think hopefully they sort of got the picture that I was quite serious almost from when I kind of started playing. So it wasn't long. I think it was only a few months or so after taking lessons, because I was taking weekly lessons at school. I couldn't really do much with what I was learning unless I had an instrument. I mean, there are ways around it, of course, and I'm a teacher now, so I teach a lot of young beginner kids, and I'm, you know, trying to get them to come up with tricks of what they can do instead of just having to fork out loads of money for a whole drum kit. But I was definitely one of the fortunate ones, and I got a Pearl Export.
Oh, wow.
And kind of played it for years and years and recorded even one or two Haken records on it as well. Eventually, so.
And, you know, it's like you were saying, it's kind of hard to get the full experience when you're using pads or the table or the wall or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. It's very difficult to keep the kid motivated if, for whatever reason, they don't actually have an instrument of their own.
So it's like you had mentioned you had started taking some lessons through school, and then what did you say, you went on to take some private lessons as well?
No, I pretty much just took lessons through the school.
Mm-hmm.
They started off just really short 20-minute lessons for a few years and then progressed to half an hour, but nothing more than that. I went through a graded system with the drums. I don't know how it is over there, but over here it's kind of, there's like 8 different grades for when you play an instrument. By the time you're sort of at grade 8 level, you're a pretty serious instrumentalist, and you have to consider if you want to take it on as a profession, maybe. So I kind of did all of those grades, or I skipped most of them, to be honest, because it was just much easier and quicker to just get, you know, do 3 or 4 different grades and skip some of the ones in between. By which point, yeah, I'd kind of reached the end of school, and I was just trying to find other ways to engage myself. But by that point, I was already in Haken, because I think I joined the band when I was about 16, maybe 17. I can't remember exactly, but.
So in school, was that where you learned how to write drum music? Because it's a lot different than piano.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, through learning all the graded syllabus stuff, I became pretty familiar with drum notation quite quickly. And through all of my other music studies at school, having to do sort of compositions and having to play in bands and orchestras and things, I was constantly exposed to different notation, and I was always kind of writing stuff for whatever project I had going on. If I wasn't coming home and playing the drums, I was coming home and writing some kind of ridiculous progressive silliness for me and a few friends to try and play or whatever. So yeah, I was writing stuff all the time as well. I mean, I'm not saying it was good stuff, it was just stuff.
Well, it was your creative process starting to emerge. Now, you had mentioned that right now that you were involved in like some orchestra stuff like that in school. So what disciplines did that teach you?
To be honest, I probably wasn't the most disciplined at school. So I think it was a lack of discipline I was taught. I was really lucky at school, because the school I went to was a very musical school. There were a few orchestras, and we're talking school in the British sense of the word. So I'm still kind of up to the age of 18, rather than school being kind of university. But there were several orchestras, wind bands, wind orchestras, choirs. They had a musical project every year, so I was often in the band for the musical, or I might be performing on stage. So I was singing, playing percussion, playing drums, playing the tuba, not really ever playing the piano for anything at school, but I was always involved in something. So I sort of developed quite a broad range of different musical abilities, I suppose.
And so who are some of your drum heroes, Ray?
Drum heroes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm fortunate to be a good friend with one of my heroes now, Mr. Mike Portnoy.
Mm.
Who I just idolized. Once I started getting into Dream Theater, I was watching live scenes from A Memory, live at Budokan, all those sort of classic live footage, and I was just there, you know, jaw on the floor, watching this band play. I think they're probably one of the few bands of that kind of era that really had such a great live output in terms of like the visual element. They really, you could sort of just sit and watch them and focus in on each individual in such a sort of detailed way. The virtuosic element of each individual member of the band. It was like an education every time you sat down to watch one of the shows, just in your living room. I learned to sort of just obsess over drummers like Mike, Gavin Harrison. Even before then, Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden. I was a big, big fan. Again, watching loads of live DVDs and things from Iron Maiden. Yeah, those kind of guys, really, from my earlier development as a drummer, I was really idolizing.
So what was it about, you know, this progressive style of drumming that really, really drew you in? I mean, like you had mentioned at first, you know, when you're listening to Iron Maiden and whatever, it's kind of a straight rock kind of drumming. Then all of a sudden, like you said, there's Dream Theater, and now there's progressive and all this different timing and technique. I mean, you must not be a lazy person, because this is way more challenging, you know, than just like a basic rock thing, which is also challenging in its own way. But you know what I'm saying? What was it that was like, oh, I really, this is what I want to pursue?
Yeah, I think I've always been, when it comes to playing an instrument, whether it be the drums or the tuba, I've always like really forced myself technically to play kind of virtuosic soloistic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As a tuba player, I've even kind of entered soloist competitions and things like that.
Wow.
And on the drums, the sort of nature of music like Dream Theater's is very much geared towards the individual members as well as the band as a whole. And
mm-hmm.
I think it was that kind of virtuosic, almost sort of theatrical element, putting all your skills on show and just being at the top of your technical and musical game. I don't know. It's like they set a bar that no one else could even come near, and I wanted to try and reach it. To my ears back then, listening to straight ahead rock, it just didn't do it for me, because it was like, oh, you listen to it and you can play it quite easily, but the stuff that people like Mike Portnoy were playing just made me really want to push myself. It's very motivational kind of music.
Right, it's a whole new level. And you also mentioned that your sisters played piano, so it's like your whole family full of artists, right?
Yeah, my two sisters ended up pursuing, I guess, more traditional career paths. They're respectively now a teacher and a doctor.
Oh boy, yeah, that's pretty respectable.
It was nice, of course, having other musicians in the family, but I wouldn't say we're like a particularly musical family. we're not like one of the, I can see what you might be picturing, and it's probably not quite that. I'm trying to think of a sort of comparison, but I'm aware of other families where they're all kind of musicians and they're all kind of, you know, Jackson Five-ing out the whole time.
I was just going to say, so there was no family band going on in the basement or anything like that?
No, not quite, unfortunately.
So you also had mentioned you do vocals and you do backing vocals. So what's it like singing and playing at the same time?
It feels and sounds a lot different when you're sat in the drummer's seat to probably what you're hearing out front, but it's certainly a challenge, especially with some of the sections of our music that happen to be in really odd times or kind of strange phrasings, and you're having to sing against those phrasings. That can always be a real pain, and it takes a long time to really get it down. But when you do get it down, it's so satisfying. You know, it's like adding another layer of voicing to your drum part. It kind of helps with your independence to some extent.
Well, when for the listener to hear that, it just sounds so natural and easy for you. But I mean, I can't imagine. It's like how you were mentioning when you're singing and it's like one type of a rhythm and then you're playing drums, that's totally different.
Yeah.
How your brain can do two different things at once it's a talent, Ray. You've got a talent.
Well, that's just drumming, isn't it? Doing two or three different
things
at once.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then you threw in singing on top of it all, and progressive drumming at that, you know, which it's just amazing to me when I see this. Now, you were involved with Haken from the beginning, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It kind of started with a few school friends who were actually older than me, and they kind of put it on hold. But then when they decided to sort of kick things back off again, that's kind of when I joined up with them.
So when you first all got together, kids, right? What was like your goal for the band? I mean, was it to get chicks or was it to...
I don't think there's ever any mention of women, unfortunately. But, the goal, as vague and ridiculous as it might seem, was just to take over the world. And that's probably very cliche as well, but that's the kind of thing that we would joke about every rehearsal. You know, this riff's going to take over the world. This riff's going to, you know, bend people's minds. We're going to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. But you've kind of got to think, you've got to have high hopes, I think, when you're writing music and making music with a band. You've got to try and aim high, otherwise, you know, you're just going to be in the garage the whole time and never move out of it. But yeah, it seems kind of silly to think that now, because we still kind of feel as a band that we're a lot smaller than perhaps people perceive us to be, and we still feel like we're still near the beginning of our journey. So yeah, the world is still our oyster, as it were.
And now your style of drumming, like we had mentioned, is a bit more involved in the progressive genre. So how do you go about writing drum parts for the band?
It's become a lot more detailed and perhaps clinical, actually, in more recent albums, as you probably might be able to hear from the progression compared with our earlier stuff. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of programming now. To the point, actually, as the demo process progresses, I'm just constantly tweaking my drum part until I've got basically a note-for-note version programmed that I then go to record in the studio. So we all use Logic, and we basically just share projects back and forth. We keep tweaking and updating the arrangement, or we might just totally change it. And then all the while I'm just programming kind of note for note what I'm going to play, and with the kind of setup in mind that I'm going to be playing on. So by the time I'm actually recording in the studio, I've got written, notated drum music for 99% of what I'm going to play, and it's all ready to go.
And I was just going to mention that, too, that you also write these drum guides for the albums. How did that all come about for you to, you know, get involved in doing that now as well?
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of bands doing that kind of thing now, perhaps more so guitarists do that kind of thing. But again, thinking back to people like Mike, back when I was trying to learn some Dream Theater stuff, I wasn't just learning it by ear. I was finding some notation of his as well, just to read through and mm-hmm. and see how it compared. And I think for certain people, not everyone, but for a lot of people, actually having the notation to learn from is really beneficial. Some people even just want the notation just to have it because they're big Haken fans and they like the idea of just collecting everything that we put out.
Right.
So there's plenty of people who buy the book who aren't even drummers, which is kind of funny. But it's nice nonetheless. It's a nice souvenir for them, I suppose. And I sign all of them as well. And it's quite a personalized process. Like, I don't chuck them on Amazon or sell them through some third party. I do it all myself, just through emails and Facebook messaging, basically.
And now lately, like you had mentioned also, you've been doing some teaching. Now, do you take students of every level?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was going to say, you know, what are some, like, important tips that you give your students to help them to improve their craft? I mean, from the beginning level to the level where they're, you know, at your level even.
Yeah. Well, if you're a beginner, I think the most important thing you need to do, first of all, is just scrap anything to do with technique or, you know, worrying too much about those kinds of things, about the kind of nitty-gritty detail, but is actually just establishing a kind of musical taste and understanding what your taste might be, and then just finding music in that kind of genre to just play along to. And listen to it and learn by ear rather than by reading, which is, I mean, that's kind of, I'm speaking from my own experience, mm-hmm. really, because although I have a very sort of classical background as a drummer, I'm not hugely sort of classically oriented. I have learned by ear most of the time. And it just, I think you can learn a lot more quickly and a lot more broadly by doing it like that, rather than just by putting a sheet of music in front of you or trying to learn a particular technical system or method. All that stuff can come later, but I think the first thing is to really try to understand what it is that you like, what it is that you don't like, and just really immerse yourself in that music and just play along to it, no matter how kind of accurate that is. Just by the act of playing along to something, you're developing your time, which is the kind of number one skill you need as a drummer. It's got nothing to do with technique. It's all about timekeeping.
And what about for the more advanced drummers that already kind of know the genre that they like and have already been playing with it? So what do you tell them guys now, Ray?
So, yeah, I guess I tell them a little bit of that as well, mm-hmm. because sometimes they might think they've got it and they still need to go back to the basics. A lot of what I do, even with my most advanced people and with myself all the time, is just going over the basics, doing really simple things, making sure that technical aspects of my playing are just as smooth and fluid as they can be. And then if I want to challenge them, then I'll get them on some kind of system that they might not have thought about, like New Breed, for example, is a real mind bender for a lot of people who haven't come across it. Or some kind of swing time stuff, which is great for developing a different sort of independence that you, as a kind of rock or progressive drummer, might not have ever kind of an avenue that you might not have ever gone down. So yeah, just trying to find different avenues that the drummer might not have thought about, and applying some kind of method to it that just gives them a structure that they can independently go down themselves without having too many lessons.
I mean, are there exercises also that you kind of teach to, you know, keep timing or even help with like endurance and strength and all that kind of physical aspect of drumming?
Yeah, I guess so. It's all a case by case thing, I suppose, especially if I'm actually presented with a drummer who's already been playing for years and I haven't built them up myself. But you know, most of the people that I teach, they are either sort of beginner level, and they, you know, they go through school and then suddenly they go off to uni and I never see them again, mm-hmm. or they're big Haken fans who have been playing for 20, 30 years, some of them, and they want a kind of new angle on things, or they want to learn a particular Haken song, and we can take it from there. We can kind of learn about sort of a lot of the time they want to learn about polyrhythmic things, mm-hmm. or they want to strengthen their double kick playing, mm-hmm. Or they just want to understand why it is or how it is that I write the parts that I do. So yeah, there's definitely some sort of common topics that we always cover, especially with the Haken fans specifically, because we've actually got a kind of a relatable topic between us, mm-hmm. a common interest, I suppose, in our drumming.
So now, how important are like things like grip and posture and thrown distance and all that to a drummer?
I think they are all very important, but I think it's also important not to not to sort of overly focus on them. You know, I mean, if a drummer has developed over many years, they're kind of set in their ways,
right.
And the way they hold the stick or the way that they sit, is it just works for them. And mm-hmm. if you try and screw around with that, you might do more harm than good.
Right.
But it's worth definitely poking at a little bit and seeing. And often it does make a difference that they really sort of appreciate. But yeah, as I said, I think if you go over the top with that sort of thing, sometimes you can risk losing interest or kind of losing motivation from them. Grip is one of the things that I often find I have to introduce new ideas to with, mm-hmm. with certain drummers. And usually, from what I hear from them, because often a lot of the more advanced drummers I teach, I only ever give them one or two lessons.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm on tour, for example, they might come to the venue and we just have an hour together and we go over their technique and we go over something else. And then often they, I get a message from them down the line saying, oh, you know, your approach has really helped open up my playing and loosen everything up. And yeah, posture is so important. And I suppose the classical background that I have as well kind of reinforces my sort of little obsession with the sort of technicality of playing. So yeah, these are all things that I'm thinking about all the time as well, but I also think it's important not to go too over the top of them.
Have you ever hurt yourself playing drums?
I haven't ever sort of developed like a long-term injury or anything like that. The only time I ever hurt myself playing drums is if I, you know, smash my finger through a cymbal when I'm trying to choke it. Back in the earlier days when I did have a much tighter grip and much softer skin, my index fingers would just totally crack at the beginning of a tour, and I just have a big open wound on both of them, and I sometimes have to wear gloves. But that doesn't happen anymore. I don't know if my technique's loosened, my skin's a lot thicker. So I don't get any sort of hand or finger injuries, and I've never had a sort of prolonged wrist or arm or shoulder injury or anything like that.
So what's your current setup right now?
Current setup is the same it's been for a few years now. It's not too out of the ordinary. So I got a 14-inch. Well, actually, I've been playing a lot of 13-inch snare over the last couple of years, which is really nice. Just having a little bit of extra space to place everything else. Mm-hmm. And then 8, 10, 12 racks, 16 floor. All tuned quite specifically as well. I've been following a kind of tuning method for those, just to, especially from a touring point of view, being able to get them to sound consistent every night is really important. And then the cymbals, I usually have a couple of crashes either side of me. I've got 14 hats where you'd usually find them, and then I've got a couple of stacks to my right, so a little stack which kind of acts as a, it's almost like a secondary hi-hat sometimes, and then a big stack which is super trashy, like an 18 or 19 stack. And then usually a china somewhere between 18 and 20 just over my right side as well, and a little splash on my left. God, the list is starting to get longer and longer. But yeah, I get a bit more excited about cymbals, and sometimes have to kind of make a bit of a cull so that I don't end up having too many cymbals on my setup.
Do you find yourself, as the years go by, increasing your drum setup or decreasing it?
Yeah, it kind of fluctuates up and down just slightly every now and again. But as I said, for the last, I don't know, about 3 years, I've kind of stuck with the same setup. And I've stuck with that setup for the new album Virus as well. So I'll no doubt be sticking with that setup for at least another couple of years.
Now,
there's a chance I might actually put in another kick drum. I might go for the whole double bass drum thing, which might be fun.
Are you endorsed by any of these companies?
Yeah, so my main drum endorsement is with Natal. I don't know if you come across Natal. They're not one of the major drum names, but they're getting their name in there now, especially over this part of the world, because they're a UK company to start with, and they're getting a lot of festival, they're getting their drum kits in a lot of festival backlines. Mm-hmm. So lots of people are starting to see the name about now, which is good. But yeah, fantastic drums. And then the cymbals that I play, a company called Samson. Again, not one of the major brands. Samson is actually a city in Turkey where they're made. So they're beautiful handmade Turkish cymbals. They're the best I've ever heard. I've got a few. I guess the thing with playing drums is you've got to have so many different types of things. You've got to have sticks, heads, drums, cymbals, hardware, electronics sometimes, pedals. There's so many different kind of things you've got to think about. I'm fortunate to be supported by almost all the things that I use are kind of through endorsements. So I've got Gibraltar Hardware, Remo Heads. I play Roland electronics. I've got some electronics on my left hand side. I've got this Porter and Davies BC2 butt kicker. I don't know if you've come across those. They're pretty immense for kind of kick drum monitoring. And then I've got these little sim pads as well, which are these like felt alternatives for cymbals. Yeah.
And your pedals? We haven't heard that yet.
Oh, the pedals. I don't have a pedal endorsement. Oh. I have been playing Iron Cobras for years, mm-hmm. but I also sometimes switch into the Natal double pedals are nice as well. But I've recently been playing offset double pedals, which are like a symmetrical double pedal. I don't know if you've come across those at all. They're pretty cool. So I'm just practicing at home at the moment, I'm able to just, you know, experiment with different bits and bobs. And I've been meaning to really get into those pedals for a while because I was given a pair by the people who run the company, actually. Mm-hmm. They just gave me a pair last time we were in Chicago. So yeah, they're a pretty cool pedal, worth checking out, offset pedals.
So you mentioned the new album, Virus. So did you have this title prior to the COVID virus that we are experiencing, or does this title refer to what's going on in today's world?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't refer to what's going on in today's world directly, at least. And you've got to bear in mind as well that we recorded all of this. We finished recording about midway through January, maybe towards the end of January. Mm-hmm. So by which point, the virus had obviously spread through China, but most of us, I think, were just oblivious to the fact that it was about to cause such havoc.
Right.
Like we were on tour in North America in mid-March when it hit over there, mm-hmm. and we had no idea it was going to be so serious. We thought we'd be able to finish the tour, and then overnight we had to be coming home. So it's a pure coincidence. We came up with the name back in 2017 or 2018, I think, when we started writing Vector. The previous album. So there was always going to be this two-part double album type thing going on, and we had the titles set out for quite a while.
So what were you like when, oh my God, there's a virus coming out, and now we have this album, Virus?
I know, it's a lot to deal with, unfortunately. But our label actually said... just before the cutoff point to kind of submit the album, they said, "Now, are you sure you want to call this album Virus? We're not saying you shouldn't, but if you do decide you want to stick with the title, we'll support you either way, basically." By which point we'd fully committed to it already, so we just said, screw it, you know, it's not called COVID-19.
No.
It's not that specific.
Well, and it's like you said, you already were thinking of that title when the last album was released, so it wasn't like any of this was in play at the time. And now, your drum work on the album, again, is amazing. So were there any challenges for you in making this particular album?
Any challenges? I mean... to be honest with you, every new Haken album is like the biggest challenge I've ever had to face as a drummer. So it's just the overall album from start to finish is just a massive challenge for me. And it's partly because of the way that I write for myself and because of the kind of music that we write as a band. It's challenging anyway. There's lots of complexity in there. But because I write now so specifically, rather than kind of leaving things to chance in the studio, I'm kind of bound by these very technical and specific parts that I've written. That alone is just a big challenge. It's a lot of music to learn in a short amount of time. I usually have about a month to actually learn the parts once I've finished writing them, because I don't really ever get a chance to try them out too much when we're earlier on in the demo process, mm-hmm. because we're either very busy touring like we were this time around, or there's just so much work to do on the writing side of things that I just don't get that much time to actually sit down at the kit. It's the month kind of leading up to the album to recording that is a massive challenge in itself, and then the being in the studio under the microscope is even more of a of a challenge. So, yeah, any specific bits? I mean, there were two songs in particular on this album that really pushed me, and that's Carousel and The Messiah Complex, both of which are just kind of vast, expansive arrangements that go through countless different styles and changes and, yeah, super technical. But each and every song had its own challenges, really, as they all do with Aiken stuff for me.
So explain to people that might be hearing of the band for the first time and are going to check out the album, explain to us a little bit about the Messiah Complex part of the album.
the Messiah Complex was actually... It was a song that we were writing... I actually started writing the song, I don't know, around the time when we were working on Vector, and we actually had the idea to put it on Vector on our previous album, but it didn't ever quite work out. So the song was always kind of a little bit of a monster and a bit of a kind of nightmarish piece of music, especially in terms of the way that it's structured. It kind of goes all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's not like our everyday Hagen song. It draws on a lot of themes, ideas and little quotes and things from lots of our previous music, in particular a song called The Cockroach King, and takes a lot of those ideas and just kind of expands on them and just repeats them until it's almost ridiculous. It's a very ridiculous, theatrical, over-the-top song, and it's perfect for the kind of real classic prog lovers out there who just really want to hear something outrageous. When you're writing music like that, and that's kind of the aesthetic of the song, you can kind of justify writing ridiculous parts for yourself and just going off on silly tangents, because that's kind of the point. It's the basis of that kind of music. It's not like one of the more straight-ahead songs that we have on the album. So it really is, as I've been telling a lot of people, it's kind of a little bit of a kitchen sink song. It's just, there's everything in there, and more, hopefully.
And now, of course, your touring is on hold for the moment, but what's it like for a drummer to be on tour? I mean, have you had any tour disasters yet?
for a drummer specifically, or kind of just being on tour? What do you mean?
Both.
Both. This might be kind of a known thing in America, but when last time we toured over there, back in I think it was the end of 2018 when we were doing the sort of Vector headline cycle, the weather was just appalling. The snow got so bad that we couldn't even drive to the next city, and we were just stuck at a truck stop. Mm-hmm. It looked like we might have to cancel three or four shows at this point. We were really concerned. In fact, the band that we were touring with, a band called Bent Knee, they were touring in a little van somewhere down the road behind us. They flipped their van in the snow. And they all turned out fine, but their van didn't, unfortunately. So they had to miss two or three shows. Unfortunately, we had to miss a show in Lawrence. But then we just about made it to the next show in Denver about an hour before we were supposed to be on stage. that was a really, really stressful setup and just play. But it's fun. The kind of more stressy, anxious moments on tour are often what kind of fuel the more exciting shows that you play.
And now, other than Haken, are you involved in any other bands? Do you do like guest spots on albums or anything like that?
Up until this point, I've done one or two little things, but my proudest guest spot moment has to be on Brian Bella's solo album, Scenes from the Flood, mm-hmm. which I believe finally came out last year, although he was working on it, I think, probably almost 10 years.
Wow, yeah.
And it's got a whole host of just insane legends on there. I mean, it's got Joe Satriani, who he plays bass with. Gene Hoagland is one of the drummers on there. Joe Travers, another phenomenal drummer who Brian plays with regularly. He used to play with in the Zappa band, or at least he played in Zappa, plays Zappa. I'm not sure if he played with Frank himself, but Jeffrey Govan. John Petrucci is playing a guitar solo on one of the songs that I recorded, which is just a total complete mind bender. I mean, it's this epic sort of 8-minute song, and I get to do a little drum solo in it, and then that John Petrucci comes in with a guitar solo, and I'm just thinking, man, my 16-year-old self is having an absolute moment right here.
And what's going on for you and the band for the rest of the year? I know a lot of things have been canceled, but some bands are slowly getting into things that are, for even this year. You guys got anything going on?
Well, we did. Yeah, we were supposed to be touring about now, actually. Mm-hmm. We should be doing festivals. Then we were supposed to be doing a bunch of European dates to kind of our own headlining stuff, sort of October, November, December time. But although some bands and some events are still potentially happening at that point, we just thought it was kind of too risky, so we've had to cancel all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're rescheduling it all for early next year.
Right.
We were supposed to have... Yeah, I think we're supposed to have a North American tour at some point this year as well. I think August time. Yeah, in mid-August to mid-September, we were supposed to be touring in North America for a month. So we had loads and loads of touring lined up for this year that's all had to be postponed to next year. And we hope that it won't be postponed any later already than it has been.
And in Leaving Rave, for you, what is the best part of playing drums and how does it affect your life?
So I just bought a house 2 weeks ago, which has been kind of I've been trying to do for years. And I wouldn't have had to buy an entire house if I wasn't a drummer. So it's affected my life financially very much so, because I could just happily live in a flat if I played the bass or the guitar.
That's true.
So I'm very, very jealous and envious of my bandmates, and I don't think they quite understand how much of a pain in the arse it is to be a drummer. So I actually hate playing the drums. I do love playing the drums, obviously. The best thing about it is got to be when you're actually on stage, basically demanding the rest of the band to do what you're kind of telling them to do. That's just I love that sense of power. I know the drummer's usually at the back, and sometimes people don't even notice him, but I feel like I've got all the cards, and if the other guys don't play nicely, then they'll hear about it.
Well, you see everything from back there, Ray.
Exactly. I am the purveyor of lands.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining us today, telling us a little bit about your career and your style and the band, of course. And all the best to you and the band and your career.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.